Well, hello there. Welcome to the Mill Housing Nation podcast, where we help military families PCS better. I'm your host, Lindsay Litton. Over the next 20 minutes, we're dishing out tips, tricks, and actionable steps you can implement to make your next PCS an easy one. From interviews with local military real estate experts to fellow powerhouse military spouses that have been there and moved that, we're highlighting some of the major issues that impact military families when they move. And before we get started, a quick shout out to our sponsor, Mill Housing Network. Mill Housing Network helps military families get connected with local military real estate experts all over the U.S. If you're considering buying or selling a home, connect with Mill Housing Network online at millhousingnetwork.com. Or you can also visit us on Facebook at Mill Housing Network on Facebook. All right, so let's dive in. Today's guest is a fellow military spouse, Miss Shannon. And Shannon, I want to pronunciate your last name correctly. So
it's a whole lot of vowels all shoved together. Okay. Rowan.
Yep. Rowan. Yep. Okay. You are with the Center of Nonprofit Excellence. And I have to say, I'm really looking forward to this interview for two reasons. Well, many reasons, but just seeing you is super fun. Shannon is going to talk about some of the major legislation changes impacting military spouse employment, which I'm really excited to hear about. And she is also going to be talking about a subject that is really fascinating. It is when your family geobatches. Yes. And so for those of you that don't know what geobatching is, it is more popular than you think. It means that the service member actually moves without the family. Am I
correct?
Is that the correct definition?
Yep.
Okay.
That's the way we define it. So.
Okay, good. And what is even more shocking, there was a recent study done, and it cited that 43% of military families choose this option at some point during their military service life cycle. And I'm sure as you're aware, there's obviously some pros and cons associated with
Definitely.
Making this decision. So I'm excited to learn from you and how this is going for your family.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm excited to talk about this.
Yay! Okay, so Shannon, welcome to Mill Housing Nation. Thank you for being a guest, and I'm looking forward to hearing your insights. So let's get started. I want to hear a little bit more about your military life journey before we jump into some of the issues. So how many PCSs, how many career changes, and
all the good stuff, right?
All the good stuff. And how did you guys get here?
Oh, man, I can't tell you how many times I ask myself that question. How did I get here? So my husband and I have just been married for 9 years. We just celebrated our 9th wedding anniversary.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Got married in Vegas?
We did. We got married in Vegas on Valentine's Day.
So
like,
exciting.
So stereotypical, right? Like, such a cliche. But it was awesome. We've done 4 PCS moves, and we have 2 children. I have a 5-year-old and an 8-year-old.
Okay.
And, you know, I've worked in nonprofits, either with nonprofits or for nonprofits all of my professional life. I was raised in Arizona and moved out to Washington, D.C. after college. And that's where I met my husband. Of course,
Aww.
He was, you know, slaving away inside the Pentagon. And somehow he convinced me to leave my job. I was the executive director of a national nonprofit organization at the mm-hmm. time. And he's like, you should come move with me to beautiful Fort Leavenworth, Kansas. And I said, sure.
Like
I don't know why.
Totally.
Do,
blinded by like, love.
I'll leave this fantastic job at an organization that I love to follow you to the middle of nowhere in Kansas. And looking back, I often wonder, I'm like, man, I didn't really consider like all that was going into that decision that we made, but I'm so happy that we did it because I have a fantastic husband, I have fantastic children,
Aww.
And I love him so much. And you know, we've had a great life, you know, through mm-hmm. those 4 PCS moves and really building a tribe and making some great connections through the military. Mm-hmm. You know, we're really grateful. But yeah, I will say, so how many career changes have I had? Man, so I was the executive director of a nonprofit organization, get myself to Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, and it's right as the Great Recession is really starting to
of
kick
course.
In.
Yeah.
Naturally, timing is everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
It took me about 4 months to find a job. Okay. And when I finally found a job at a nonprofit, I went from being an executive director to being an executive assistant. Was a huge step backwards.
Sure.
It was a huge cut in my salary, and I was only able to hold the job for about 7 months before we had another PCS.
Wow.
So we get here to Colorado Springs. Again, recession has really taken hold. The nonprofit sector here was hit particularly hard, and I could not find a job for anything. Mm-hmm. And I gave up. No joke. I, you know, we had a child, and I decided that you know, I just pursue education and devote my time to my family, to my children. And, you know, I became one of those annoying Pinterest moms who, like, overdid everything, volunteered way too much of my time with the FRG because I was just really looking for a way to, like, fill that part that my professional life had filled. And, you know, it worked for a little bit, but I was really missing work.
Understandable. And that was something that we actually just talked about with Amy, is that military spouses, they fill the void by going back to school, getting another degree, or volunteering. And, you know, we find that military spouses are the most highly educated staff of volunteers out there.
Absolutely. Well, and I think that it really plays into the issue of underemployment as well, because I know, at least for me personally, my advanced degrees and my pursuit of higher education wasn't tied to a professional need. It was tied to my own desire to challenge and fulfill myself, right? So it wasn't that I was getting a master's to get that next job in my organization. It's that I was super bored and I needed to do something with myself. So, you know, so often I think when I look at those studies and I see, you know, a third of us report being underemployed, I wonder if it's not because we're looking for meaningful engagement when we can't find the careers that we want because we are unemployed.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think it is.
Yeah.
It absolutely is. And I think for a lot of military spouses, they're just one of the things that came up in our previous podcast is you're just filling the time.
Totally.
Filling the time. I just need to do something. I need to hang on for a year. I just need something to do, and I'll take it.
I'll take it. Yep. I'll just, exactly. And then you walk away and you're like, well, how am I going to find a job now that leverages all of this great experience and education that I have that's going to pay me well in a city where I don't have a network, where I'm not connected with anybody? And it can be a really, I think, just this like cycle of like, man, it's just, it doesn't get better, right? And I think that you see that in the salary gap that we have when we're compared to our civilian counterparts.
Oh, yeah.
Really, yeah.
What is that gap?
Oh, my gosh, it's huge. I can't remember the numbers off the top of my head. What always strikes me about the graph, though, is that the gap is negligible when you look at military spouses and their civilian counterparts who don't have high school degrees.
Wow.
The gap gets bigger when you look at high school degrees. And then as education increases, the gap gets larger. So instead of mitigating the problem, advanced degrees only seem to exacerbate the problem. So the more educated you are, the less you make when compared to your civilian counterparts. How sad is that?
It is really sad. It is really sad. Oh, my gosh, it's sad. Okay. Yep. All right. So how did you get connected to the Center of Nonprofit Excellence?
That's a great question. So we were in Colorado Springs for a bit. We moved to North Carolina and then came back to the Springs. And I'd had my daughter, and, you know, she's getting older, and I was really missing work. And I finally decided that I was ready to jump back in to the professional arena, and I really struggled. It was hard, and I thought I was doing everything right. I thought, you know, I volunteered when they told me I was supposed to volunteer. I pursued advanced degrees. I, you know, I was networking my butt off. I was really trying to engage and connect in the community. I couldn't get an interview. I was so frustrated. And finally, I was able to find a job with a local nonprofit organization. Great organization, great position. It was only 10 hours a week.
Wow.
Yeah. But I took it because it was really the I had to get my foot in the door. It was the best option at the time. And thankfully, this organization was really connected in the community. And through my work with it, I was able to connect with a lot of organizations, including the Center for Nonprofit Excellence. I met my my boss, Abby, at a coffee shop to talk about a program that we were trying to launch. And we just really hit it off and connected. And, you know, I think it was very apparent to her that I was a total nonprofit nerd. You know, I love board source webinars. I love talking about overhead, you know, fundraising, all that fun stuff. And as we were sitting there, she looked at me and she's like, "Do you want to work more? Do you want more hours?" Like,
please.
And I was like, "Yes, absolutely." She's like, "We have a position that's opening up.
Aww.
I'd really like you to apply for it." And I did. And, you know, she hired me, and that was almost 3 years ago.
Aww.
So, yeah,
that's
it's
awesome.
Been wonderful. It really has been wonderful. And I'm very grateful. I'm the only military spouse inside the organization.
Really?
I'm the first military spouse they've ever hired.
Stop it.
Seriously.
Really?
Seriously.
So have you just expanded their mind and blown their mind?
I think that it's been a really great opportunity to talk about, you know, especially here in Colorado Springs, the military is a critical component of the community, and veteran service organizations make up a critical component of our nonprofit sector.
Mm-hmm.
So to be able to bring that perspective and shed light on some of the issues that our military is facing and then also that our VSOs are facing has been really special. to me.
Well,
yeah.
I'm excited that you're a voice for us within the organization. So keep up the good work.
Thank you.
So how has your position allowed you to work on military spouse employment issues?
So I will say, like, on the surface, it doesn't. But I have a really great boss and really great colleagues who understand that, you know, coming out of that experience where I was so frustrated and not able to find a job that I really thought fit the skills and, you know, experience that I bring to bear for an organization. Like, I just don't want anybody to ever feel like I felt.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And they're very graceful and gracious and allow me the time and space to advocate and work on that issue. So, like, you know, when you think about the Center for Nonprofit Excellence, military spouse employment is probably not the first thing that pops into your mind. But they have really given me the opportunity to be out and engaged in the community on the issue.
That's exciting.
And, yeah, so as a result of my my work with CNE, I connected with the Military Spouse Career Committee and have served on that for 2 years. I'm the current co-chair. And, you know, MSCC's mission is really to, we see Colorado Springs as the model community for military spouse employment issues.
Absolutely.
We want to be the bar that everybody else measures themselves against. Mm-hmm. And we're working, we're a coalition of business leaders, military spouses, service providers who are working to enact that vision.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, it's a lot of fun. And I will say the other thing that I get to do through CNE is help military spouses who are looking to connect with nonprofit jobs find those avenues.
So you're that
funnel for
them. Yeah,
I can be that conduit. You know, I can be the person that I didn't have access to when I was looking. And then I also get to work with veterans who are interested in starting their own nonprofit organizations and help to demystify that process and help them start smart and do the best job that they can to meet their mission. So I love that.
That's exciting.
I love that.
Yay! Yeah. Keep up the good work. Keep up the good fight. What are some of the biggest legislation changes you are seeing for military spouses?
I have to say, like, I think now is a really, really exciting time from
a
legislative perspective.
I mean, we're talking about, 5 years ago,
Some
of the issues that we're talking about today, we didn't even talk about.
No, totally. And I think that they weren't even on the radar, right?
Yeah.
Like, they weren't even on people's radars. And now you have prominent, well-known political figures who are out there advocating and talking about these things that I think all of us have been facing for, you know, for like 10 years at least, you know, at least for me personally. So I think Senator Kaine's bill is interesting. You know, his bill is designed to provide some incentives and and pushes to help make military spouse employment easier.
Okay.
Particularly, I think the interesting focus in Senator Kaine's bill is alleviating some of the issues that mil-spouse entrepreneurs face on installations, which is fascinating to me. And then, well, so he wants the DoD to really look at what installations are requiring when, say, like a mil-spouse entrepreneur moves onto an installation and brings her business with her.
I see. I have talked with a lot of military spouses.
Yeah.
This is an issue. They can't have a daycare. They can't run the business out of base housing.
Well, yeah, and I don't know if you remember. I think it was a couple of years ago. There was a big issue out in Hawaii where a mil-spouse personal trainer had like a boot camp and really got into trouble with the installation. They didn't want to let her operate on the installation because they saw her as competitive
with
their
facilities.
The
facility.
Yep,
okay.
Absolutely,
oh.
Absolutely.
Wow.
So, you know, I think that that can be a real detriment to mil-spouse entrepreneurs, especially when you think about the time that it takes to reestablish your business. You kind of need to hit the ground and just start operating, right? Building that base, building those connections. If you're also having to wait for an installation to approve your your ability to operate inside the installation, that can be challenging.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
So Kaine's bill does ask for the DoD to look at how we can reduce and eliminate some of those barriers, which I think is really, really
exciting.
That is
exciting.
Yeah,
okay.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, there's other things in there about federal hiring authorities so that DoD jobs are more accessible to military spouses. I think that's really interesting because I do think those federal jobs are places that military spouses look to first because they're often something that you can, you know, transfer into another position when you PCS. I think that that's really, really helpful. I think the other thing that's really interesting in this particular bill is it asks DoD to assess what's happening with childcare and to really look strongly at what's happening with childcare on installations. And, you know, Lindsay, as you and I both know, I know we've had this conversation before, you know, if you don't have access to quality childcare that you trust, it's really hard to have employment.
Yeah. No, I mean, That is one of the biggest things that military spouses face totally. When they think about going back to work is who's going to take care of my kids and can I trust them? Not being a transplant into that community, it's really difficult to have people that you can trust instantly for your children.
Absolutely.
And we're not even talking about affordability.
Yeah, don't even get started on cost, right? Yeah. I think so many times you just kind of take it for granted that people who maybe are not inside our lifestyle don't think like, we don't have access to our grandparents. Mm-hmm. Like my mom is in Arizona, my in-laws are mm-hmm. in Minnesota. There is no way that they can pick up my child for me after school on a day when I get stuck in the office or like on the days when my kids are sick. Like, okay, mm-hmm. what do I do? Mm-hmm. You know, and I've been really, really lucky to work with employers who are flexible enough mm-hmm. And who value me enough to like make it work, right? Like they see what I bring to the organization, we figure out a way to make it work. And I'm incredibly grateful for that. Not all military spouses can say the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. I mean, I can't tell you how many times. And I will go you one more and say that it is really difficult for your military spouse to take time off for work. So 9 times out of 10, it is you that has to be flexible.
Oh, absolutely. No, it's so true. I will say when I first went back to work, that became a huge kind of sticking point for us.
Sure.
Like, and was definitely some negotiation that we had to kind of go through and like reassess, mm-hmm. you know, because he got used to me being home for 5 years mm-hmm. I just took care of everything. Mm-hmm. And I remember one day I'd been back to work maybe 3 months and our oldest got sick and I had an important meeting. Like it was with a potential funder. Like I could not miss this meeting. We waited forever to get this meeting. And by God, my husband took our son to work with him.
Yeah.
And he, you know, he sat through the briefings that day.
Yeah.
God bless him. Uh-huh. And I was really, really grateful that we were in a position where he could make that choice.
Sure.
But I know that that's exceedingly rare and not something that most people can make.
Yep. Yeah. I've been on business trips where I've gotten a phone call or a picture of my kids in a briefing room because somebody was sick and someone has a model airplane that they're running around with.
We promise those briefings are unclass. Like,
yep. Totally legit.
But I will say, so that's the interesting, to me, that's really interesting legislation that's moving at the national level. I think that there are really cool things happening here in the state of Colorado I'm super excited about. The legislative session here in Colorado started in January, and we've already seen two bills, either one was passed and then one is working its way through the process right now, that deal specifically with military spouse licensure issues.
Oh. Ooh, okay.
Absolutely, right? Super exciting.
This impacts a lot of real estate agents, teachers, lawyers.
Absolutely.
Yep, okay.
So the first one dealt with the Interstate Reciprocity Compact for nurses. There was an issue that came up, and the legislature quickly passed a fix to make sure that there was still reciprocity in place for military spouse nurses.
That's good.
What happened a few weeks ago was House Bill 1095 was passed in the Colorado House, and it's designed to improve licensure requirements for military spouses.
Okay.
So previously in the state of Colorado, to qualify for a Colorado teacher's license, you had to have 3 years of continuous teaching experience in your previous location.
Mm-hmm.
And as a military spouse, I can tell you, like, three years in one place where you can actually
Holy Toledo,
like,
that's
practice
like heaven.
Your profession for the full 3 years? No, it's a pipe dream, right?
Sure.
So the legislators really heard military spouses that was a problem. And the bill that came through said that you just needed 3 years of teaching experience in the last 7 years.
Wow, okay.
Which is, I think, far more reasonable for military spouses to be like, yes, that's a box I can check.
So that's great.
That passed through the Colorado House, and it's up for consideration in the Senate right now.
Nice.
And yeah, we're really hopeful that it's going to make it through the process and go to the governor for signature.
Wow, that's exciting.
But I think that there's increasing attention at the state level of the importance of this particular mm-hmm. issue. And, you know, I'm really excited to work with a number of legislators who are interested in making headway, not just for nurses and teachers, but really looking at real estate agents, mm-hmm. looking at accountants, looking at our lawyers, looking at, you know, cosmetologists mm-hmm. and clinical social workers mm-hmm. and the host of professions that are governed by licensure
trainers.
Requirements.
I mean,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And finding out how we can remove some of those obstacles so that military spouses can hit the ground and start working mm-hmm. rather than worrying about, well, how am I going to pay for this? How am I going to make this happen? Who do I have to argue with? And how do I prove that this is what I'm entitled to? So I'm really excited about that. You know, we've seen great movement this legislative session, and I anticipate that next year we'll see more movement on this issue.
That's exciting.
Yeah. I don't know if you saw the letter from the service secretaries that went to the National Governors Association. It was issued a couple of weeks ago, and the service secretaries really emphasized that the quality of schools and a state's willingness to ease licensure burdens for military spouse employment issues are going to be things that DOD considers when it's looking at base allocation and at mission assignments.
Hey.
I know, right?
Hey.
We have joined.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
So I'm excited. I think that now more than ever, there is a growing understanding of the economic hardships that this issue places on military families. Two-income households are the norm. We're not the exception.
No.
So
I mean, it is not what our mothers and grandmothers have dealt with. I mean, we live in a society now where it is not necessarily a luxury. I mean, it is a necessity.
It's a necessity for so many families. So how do we as a community create opportunities, meaningful opportunities for military spouses where they can be employed and compensated fairly? Mm-hmm. And it's great to see, you know, folks at the national level step up and really talk about this issue. But we're seeing that same kind of movement here locally, and that's really exciting to me.
That's really exciting. Yeah. I mean, nobody ever says no to coming to Colorado as for a PCS. So, I mean,
that is
some encouraging words, Janet.
Well, I will say the Army can send you some pretty ugly places. Like,
so
this place is amazing.
So
for me, you know, to know that we live in a community that is so supportive of our military, but to also see that employers are really starting to hear what we're talking about and understand that it's not just about charity. Like, as military spouses, we make fantastic employees. We're the kind of people you want inside
Hands
your organization.
Down. Yes.
And to see them stepping up and saying, "Yeah, we're gonna work to hire military spouses. We're going to incorporate this into our recruitment and retention plans," has been super exciting.
That is exciting. I love hearing that. Yeah. Go Colorado.
Yay!
Okay, so I want to get personal.
Yep.
Let's talk personal here for a minute. So one of the things that shocked me recently was I was invited to this panel. They released this national study. They interviewed 5,000 military families all over the country, and they found 43% military families geobatch.
Yep.
I was literally blown away, and then quickly filled with tears because a panelist got up and talked about how she was an attorney and they needed two incomes, and she did not have the luxury of being able to move with him and continue to pay off the big debt that she just incurred by getting her law degree. Not even to mention the licensing issues of switching states and finding another job and
going through the bar again. Absolutely. Yep.
So they had to make the decision of geobatching, and it was heartbreaking. I mean, she was in tears. She talked about how difficult it was on her family and the decision that they had to make because they did it for 5 years while he moved. And so I know this is an issue that's near and dear to your heart because you are going through this now. So I want to talk with you about how you guys came to the decision, and what are some of the reasons that, you know, you guys decided this was the best decision for your family right now?
Well, and I will say this was not an easy decision, but it was a decision that we were kind of forced to make really, really quickly.
Sure.
So my husband was
like the military.
Yeah, like that's how we roll, right?
Do you want to move here? Yeah. You've got 20 minutes.
That's honestly what it felt like. My husband was in Afghanistan last year. And we anticipated when he came back that we would be moving back to Washington, D.C. and have a two-year assignment in D.C. And we found out rather suddenly and quickly that that was not going to be the plan, that he was instead going to be redirected to Pennsylvania for a year, that he would spend literally less than a year in Pennsylvania, and then he would be moving to someplace else, undetermined. And in the back of our minds, there was kind of this, feeling that there was a strong chance that he'd be redirected back to Colorado Springs at a certain point, back to Fort Carson. So when we heard that, what we thought was going to happen was actually not going to happen. And I mean, like, I'd let my employer know. We were searching for houses. Mm-hmm. Like, everybody's like, "Oh, yeah, you're going to D.C. No big deal. Like, bank on it." And that, I think, should have been the number one sign for, you know, as all military spouses know, the moment the Army tells you, "Oh, yeah, you're good to go."
Yeah,
like,
I need it in writing. I want to see the orders.
Man, I've even had orders before.
And
we've been like, "Oh, yeah, totally." So, you know, he called me and he said, "Hey, it's not going to happen. I'm going to be in Pennsylvania for a year. then we're going to move someplace else, and then we'll be plunked somewhere for 2 years. And, you know, I just said, I think it would be really, really hard for me to feel okay with giving up everything, mm-hmm. pulling the kids out of a school and a community that they love, giving up a career that I fought so hard to rebuild, mm-hmm. To move away for a year here, a year there, yeah. and then to come back.
Yeah.
And, you know, we talked about it and we decided that, you know, that the best thing for us in this moment was for the kids and I to stay here in the Springs and for him to go.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a really tough decision, especially after spending a year apart in
yeah.
Afghanistan. And it was a gamble, and it has paid off, you know, because he will be coming back to Colorado Springs now, we know. And the kids have had great success in school. Like, I'm still loving work and mm-hmm. loving being part of this community. So thankfully it worked out.
Yeah.
So far.
Right.
Well, he's not here yet though. So I should, yeah. Don't count those chickens. Right.
Yep. So how long have you guys geo-batched, and how often do you guys actually reunite? So, yeah. I mean, and I'm sorry for such
No, it's good.
I will say,
like, I was talking to him on my way in. I completely forgot to tell him that I was going to do this today. I'm like, so I'm on the phone walking into the studio. I'm like, are there things I shouldn't say, honey?
There's always that question.
Is there something you want me to share?
What is the secret squirrel stuff I can't talk
about?
Tell,
what should I not tell? And he's like, no, tell it all. So he's been gone for about 7 months.
Okay.
And he's at school this year, so we've been really lucky. We've been able to leverage the calendar, and we get him home about once a month.
Oh, that's great.
And then he also has longer breaks for, like, Christmas and spring break.
Okay.
So we have some of those longer stretches where we're able to connect with him. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
That's awesome. Yeah. That is awesome. And how has this experience changed your family?
I think I am far more cognizant of how quick I am to judge others' situations, and I think that's something that my husband and I have both talked about is we're frequently on the receiving end of other people's judgments about the choices that we've
made.
Oh, gosh, yeah. I've had friends tell me to my face how selfish they think I've been in this choice. Yeah. And how, you know, my husband's heard, like, the army separates you enough. Like, why would you voluntarily choose to separate your family? And so I think it's forced us both to be like, well, how often are we making snap judgments on the lives and choices that other people are making mm-hmm. when we don't really fully understand the context in mm-hmm. which those decisions are being made? I think I'm also far more grateful for my husband.
Sure.
And really recognize the talents and the skills and, you know, the great things that he brings to our family, and appreciate them more now when I have them here with me.
Yeah.
And I think I'm also really cognizant of how great consistency has been for our children.
Yeah,
and that's it's been fun to see.
Do you think that staying in one place, the consistency has really impacted them?
Yes.
Even though they are so young?
Yes, absolutely. I think, you know, there's ups and downs, right? So we have good days and we have bad days. I was having a bad day right before the kids went back to school. And of course, it's back to school night. So I'm like trying to get myself out of the office and drag my kids to school to meet their teachers. And I'm just like, why did I do this to myself?
Yeah.
Why did I do this to myself? We walked into my son's classroom, and, like, all of his buddies, like, just ran up and hugged him and said how excited they were to see him. I'm like, this is why we did this. This is why it made sense for us as a family. But I, you know, I've come to understand that when I feel, like, professionally fulfilled and connected, like, I'm a better mom. I'm a better Shannon. And so the consistency for the kids has been great, and it's really helped me be the best that I can be.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. And I know it's not an easy topic to talk about.
No, definitely.
I pride you in sharing, because I know this is something that a lot of military spouses, they think about. They don't necessarily I think a lot of people shame you when you even want to talk about it.
When you even want to consider it. And I think that so often, so I was so heartened when I read that 43% statistic. Like, I saw that and I'm like, holy moly, I am not alone in this. There are a lot of military families who are faced with this decision and come to the same conclusion that my husband and I came to.
Mm-hmm.
And that was empowering for me. And I think it helped me let go of some of maybe those judgments that other people have put on me that I'd kind of assumed. Like, yeah, maybe I would think, am I being selfish? How selfish am I being? Is it better for the kids and I to be apart from my husband and for us to be happy? Or is it better for us to all be together and for some of us to be miserable? You know, it's like mm-hmm. this balance of like, oh, man, did I make the right choice? But yeah.
Well, I mean, it's a difficult thing. And I think thank you for sharing on it.
Yeah. No, thank you for talking about it. I think it's important that we talk about it.
Well, I think it is really important that we talk about it. I think it's a subject that I personally had no idea that 43% of military families do. Yeah. And so I think it's exciting that we can actually explore a subject that's a little bit taboo, if
definitely,
you will.
Definitely.
And myth bust it.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
I mean, it's not terrible.
No, it's not terrible. I mean, and like you said, there's pros and cons. And I think I would, a couple of words of caution, you know, you might feel selfish at times, but I think it's really important to remember why you made the choice. And people are going to have opinions about the choices that you've made, regardless of how uninterested you might mm-hmm. be in those opinions, and you just have to let it go. And I think the most important thing that you can do is find your tribe.
Yeah.
Always, right?
Yeah.
You know, and I have friends that I don't talk to about this. Like, mm-hmm. I still love them. I still adore them. I know they still love me. We just have very different opinions on the choice that I made and that my husband and I made together. And so I don't talk to them about it. But I have friends in my life who I've discovered who have been in the same situation and made the same decision. And when I need to vent, those are the people I vent to. So
that's good.
Find your tribe. Stick with them. Love them hard.
I think that is important that you highlight that, because I know as military spouses, it's really difficult to connect with the local community. It's really difficult to find people that are like you and to form a tribe. And we have this saying in the military spouse community, the minute you make a friend, you're going to move.
Yep,
so
totally.
I think
totally. Thank God for Facebook. Like,
I know,
Facebook
right?
has made it all so much better, right? Yeah.
That is exciting. And so do you have any tips for a military family that is even considering geo batching?
Yes.
Okay.
So I would say the problem that we ran into in the beginning was I approached it like a deployment. Mm. And this is very, very different than
That's a
really deployment.
Good point. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, you know, your husband leaves for deployment. You put like your game face on,
oh, yeah.
right? Like, you are a mom of one. You
yep.
can handle every issue.
I can
issue.
Fix the washing machine.
I can make any decision
yep.
that I need to,
I got
like
it.
Whatever. But it's different. So mm-hmm. we needed to find ways to engage Brian in the decision-making process, to engage him in the lives of our kiddos. You know, it wasn't that we could talk to him just once a week. We can talk to him every day.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we make that work, and how do we create space for that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's little things. Like, we got my son an iPad, and mm-hmm. and he can FaceTime Daddy whenever he wants to.
Okay.
Right? Like,
yeah.
it's those little choices, you know, regardless of how tired I am at the end of the day, I make an effort to call him and talk
mm-hmm.
to him and talk
mm-hmm.
about our day. And then, you know, I think for me, the most important lesson learned was recognizing that this is far harder on my husband than it is on me.
Sure.
I'm home with my kids.
Yeah.
I'm home with our dogs in the
yeah.
house that we love with the fence that's falling down. You know,
he's
alone in a really small, ugly studio apartment
yeah.
by himself. So how do we support him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
this?
A really great point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, Shannon. So if our listeners want to learn more about getting involved with military spouse employment legislation,
we need you.
What do we do?
Okay, so I will say the Military Spouse Career Committee is really looking for people in Colorado Springs, particularly spouses in licensed fields, to share their stories with us. We want to hear about the challenges that you're facing. We want to hear about the roadblocks that you've encountered in the state of Colorado. We want to know what you think about how we can fix things for military spouses. So hit us up on Facebook.
Okay.
You can find us at facebook.com/MSCC.Colorado, all spelled out. PM us, give us some information. We're going to be hosting roundtables here in the near future to learn a little bit more about what's happening on the ground and how we can fix things for our real estate agents, for our cosmetologists, for our clinical social workers. Yeah, because we want to make things better.
Okay, so if you are upset with the way military spouse employment issues are being handled, this is your microphone. Get involved, say something, share your story, step forward. If you don't step forward, nothing's going
to
change.
And I will say, people want to hear what's happening, and they're committed to making things better, and they can't fix what they don't know is broken.
Right.
So it's up to us to tell them, let's engage in our local community, and let's make Colorado Springs a great place for military spouses.
Yay. Okay, so just because I lived there, San Antonio recently became the safe zone.
I saw that.
What does this mean?
I will say that we're really, really interested in this too at MSCC. it's an employment zone. It's
military spouse.
Yeah, they
safe zone for
employment.
Right?
Yeah, so the San Antonio Chamber has partnered with USAA,
yeah.
who of course is like the leader when it
comes to 40,000 jobs there in San Antonio.
Leader on military innovative military spouse employment practices to really create an environment that is conducive to military spouse employment. So yeah, we're having conversations. We want to be the second one here in Colorado Springs.
Let's
do this. We want to make it happen.
Yes.
So hopefully soon.
Okay.
Hopefully
good.
Soon.
Good. Yeah. That was something that we've been following, and we saw that
I think
recently
it's awesome.
Came out, and we're just like, holy Toledo's.
No, when
so,
I
huh?
when I read that article, I jumped up and down in my chair, and then my next thought was, how do we make it happen here? We need to make it happen here ASAP.
I thought the same thing. I was like, if San Antonio could do it, Colorado Springs
totally.
Can do it, and then we can DC can do it. Let's get this going.
Let's make it happen.
Okay. So, Shannon, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
This is so exciting. If you'd like to download today's episode or learn more about Shannon and how you can get involved with military spouse employment issues, visit us at millhousingnetwork.com. Click on our podcast and look for our episode. And while you're on our podcast page, take a moment to browse all of our past episodes where we talk a lot about employment issues and things that you can do for your next PCS. You also want to opt in to work with one of our realtors because our realtors are amazing, or fill out our form to become a guest on an upcoming show. Don't forget to sign up for our weekly podcast alerts so you can stay in the know, my fellow PCS warriors. I am Lindsay Litton. Thank you so much for listening, and join us next week for another awesome episode with PCS tips and tricks. For more information on upcoming interviews, visit us online at millhousingnetwork.com. Okay, friends, that's all we've got today. So, Shannon, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And bye for now.